check in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And let's jump right into it. A little late today on the program, Dennis Rodkin is here. He writes about real estate for Crane Chicago Business. We'll talk to Elise Glink in the second half hour. Interesting story about how, what kind of phone you use, what kind of email address you have can be an indication as to whether or not you will default on a loan. So we'll talk to Elise about that. Ian Schur in between from CNET. But, well, Rodkin, you know, he was on the show earlier this year talking about how he'd rousted out a story about Chance the Rapper and Chance tweeting at him. And now Chance the Rapper, I did this story earlier that he bought the Chicagoist, the domain and everything, and that he did it in part by releasing a song.
At midnight last night.
And it has a reference to you.
It has a reference to Cranes, yeah. It has a reference to the Sun-Times, which covered his child support battle with the mother of his child. But it also mentions Cranes. It says, people look at the video for the song called I Might Need Security. At 2:10, he says, I missed an interview with Cranes and they tried to leak my addy. And that would be me. I leaked his addy, although we, of course, didn't actually publish the address.
Right. Did he miss an interview with you?
Not with me. No. I want to be clear. I had no idea that we did not. There's no quid pro quo there. You didn't show up for an I reported the story that he had bought the condo.
Was it Danny Ecker? Did he blow off Danny Ecker?
He probably blew. Yeah. Let's blame it all on Danny. I actually don't know. I haven't been to the newsroom today, so I haven't asked. But the two incidents were not connected, but we did report that he bought this condo on or within a few days of his 25th birthday for $4 million.
Yeah, I want to love Chance the Rapper. I certainly like him a lot. So I hope he grows up a little bit about it.
Well, I want to thank him for putting me in a rap song. It's my first ever.
Yeah, you're cool again.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, when I say again, you were cool before.
I was always cool. Okay,
tell me the story about this guy pretending to be Beyonce's producer and barging into homes on the North Shore.
This is the craziest thing. This is all from a lawsuit and police reports. But what it comes down to is there's a guy who at least four homes on the North Shore, two in Highland Park, two in Glencoe, has essentially sort of tried to razzle-dazzle his way into the homes.
Into the home as in trying to buy them?
Right. They're for sale. And what one person said is they're all multi-million dollar homes. And they tend to be places that are vacant, either because I have a second home in Florida and that's where I'm staying, or because it's been on the market for a while and I've moved, that sort of thing. And so apparently what he has been doing with a North Shore real estate agent is he shows up and he's going to pay you full cash. He has claimed to be a producer for Beyonce and CeeLo Green. He's claimed to have multiple millions of dollars in cash because of the weed farm, the marijuana farm that he runs. His real estate agent has claimed he's related to Muhammad Ali.
So how many homes do we know
of? At least four.
But those are just the ones we know of.
Those are the only ones we know of. And I wouldn't be surprised if now that our story is out, we hear that he's also done it in, say, Hinsdale or Barrington.
These are all homes you've written about.
Most of them are.
You think he might be a fanboy?
Well, yeah, maybe he's been talking to Chance the Rapper.
He's just following your stories?
That's probably it. And I don't report that they're vacant, but yeah, maybe that's it.
So you said the police reports, all he's doing is maybe fabricating stories as he tries to look at homes, right? Is there a crime here?
He has not been charged. In all the Highland Park police reports, there's nothing he's been charged with. But police have been called because these homeowners feel...
It's something tinky.
Yeah, because in one case, he showed up with a group of people, sort of his entourage. He claimed to have security, his own security, circling the block outside while he's looking at this lakefront mansion. He goes all the way down to the beach, which possibly what you're doing is trying to figure out if the security system reaches that far down. One of the people in his entourage asks the owners something along the lines of, so are you traveling this summer? So it all just made them feel uncomfortable, and they called the police.
And so what do you think, we got to take a break here, but what do you think this is about?
The attorney in the lawsuit for the deal that failed, he actually was trying to buy a house in Highland Park around the holidays, around Christmas and New Year's. That attorney feels that what he's trying to do is get in Like, let me try this place out for a few days and then squat until getting evicted by the police. That's what the attorney believes.
Wow. All right, you can read that at chicagobusiness.com. We're going to take a break, talk about home sales, hot sales, and maybe Brian Urlacher, too. We'll see.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Okay, Dennis Zorotkin in the studio, and I don't know which direction because there's so much to talk to you about. We can talk about, you got a great piece up on the suburbs that are hot, some that are doing well, but you also write about sort of highfalutin real estate and celebrity real estate, and so some interesting stories. One, I want to start with the story about the guy who is the CEO and chairman of Discover, David Nelms. Sold his home, sold it for less than he paid for it, right, 20 years ago?
Sold it in 2018 for less than he had paid for it in 1998.
And this was up in Lake Forest.
It's in Lake Forest. It's in West Lake Forest. I have covered a lot of these. I think we've talked about several. It happens quite often on the North Shore. It also is happening in the city and in western suburbs, but people frequently selling homes now for lower than
I mean, 20 years is a long...
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you'd think that it would have accumulated a little bit in 20 years.
It doesn't appear that many improvements were made in those 20 years. That doesn't mean the house wasn't maintained, but
right.
It doesn't appear that anything was added to the house or anything in those 20 years. I couldn't get comment from
him. So that's
him.
Something his mansion and my house have in common. We haven't done much at it.
I haven't done anything to them.
But so the reason I like this story, though, is because I've told you before, I love learning about the history of properties. And this was part of a much bigger piece of property called Broadsmoor,
the Broadsmoor Estate, which was the home of the nephew of Montgomery Ward. Aaron Montgomery Ward and his brother-in-law were essentially the heads of Ward's. His son, James Thorne, and James Thorne's wife was Narcissa Niblock Thorne, who is the artist who created all the miniature rooms in the Art Institute.
So if you go to the Art Institute, see the exhibit of the miniature rooms, this is where they lived, part of this where this house was built.
Yeah, and I believe she fabricated many of the rooms in that mansion. The Broadsmoor mansion still exists. The property has been subdivided. There's a road that sort of swings around the old mansion, and there are a bunch of lots, including the one that sold for below its 1998 price.
Okay, let's go to the city and Jason Hayward, because the boy is hitting the ball again. He could always catch the ball, but Mr. Hayward is having a nice season at the plate as well. Which I love, and he's got a lot of money, and he just spent a lot on a condo.
Yeah, about $6.7 million on a condo. The building is number 9 Walton. It's on Walton Street in the Gold Coast. This is the same building where Ken Griffin paid $58.5 million. Others have paid $12 million there's either one or two that have sold for $12 million in that building. And one just sold yesterday for $4.5 million.
Wow.
And Jason Hayward's going to be among some high-end neighbors.
And this is on Walton, State and Walton.
Yeah.
Okay, so
brand new. They're being delivered as they finish. So his was just finished and delivered about a late June.
I do love, too, because I think more often than not in your stories, the sentence "refuse to comment" is repeated.
I can type that with my eyes closed. So-and-so did not respond to a request for comment. Yeah.
Does that ever get you down? I mean, you kind of understand it, I guess, right?
You know, after all
you're
this
like
time...
You're like a detective, though, the way you find these things out.
Thank you. No, you know, at this point, I mean, I get it. People don't want to talk to me and say, yes, I just bought a $9 million condo. I just bought a $12 million house in Lake Forest. But no, it doesn't get me down.
Okay, let's do in the city now. The CEO of Kellogg purchased a house. And the reason this story jumps out to me is because you say this could be an indication that Kellogg, as in Kellogg's, might be moving their headquarters to Chicago.
Let's say it could fuel that rumor. We have no indication that they are moving.
Let's do it
right here. They're headquartered in Battle Creek, Michigan, but they have a large number of employees at different locations here in Chicago. And he and his wife are both Northwestern alums. Which could explain why they'd be buying, if it's a second home here. But there also has been a lot of reporting that the company is sort of tilting in this direction. And as we know, a whole lot of companies, Midwestern companies, have moved their main headquarters into downtown Chicago.
Right,
the most recent is Ferrara Candy, which didn't come from far away, just came from the western suburbs, but they're coming in.
It's not related, but I got a buddy staying at a condo in Minnesota this weekend in Minneapolis, and it's the old Cream of Wheat headquarters.
Oh, how interesting.
They've converted
it to condos now?
Yeah. Dennis Rodkin, read more from him at chicagobusiness.com. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And here we are in the Allstate Skyline studio on this Thursday afternoon. Thanks very much for tuning in to the Wintrust Business Lunch. On the phone line now is Ian Schur. He's a senior editor at CNET.com and joins us on most Thursdays to talk about what's what. Ian, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm well, thank you. Okay, so earlier this week, the EU went after Google, right? As they do, the EU, they've gone after Apple before. They went after Google over antitrust issues. They fined them $5 billion, I think, in change.
Yep.
So I want you to talk about that. But in doing that, the president weighed in on it, I think, earlier today, right? So tell me what the president did and how that might impact all of this.
Well, so the president said, "I told you so. This is what happens with with the European Union," and kind of used it as a political football in his ongoing disagreements with the EU. The larger thing is that the EU is trying to step up and be the people who actually regulate the tech industry, because the United States government has pretty much abdicated all of its responsibility.
So what is
this in a lot of ways. Well, go ahead. What were you going to say?
I apologize, Ian. I was going to say, what is it Google's doing that the EU objects to?
Well, the concern that the EU has in this case is that the Android software that pretty much runs every phone that's not an iPhone has on it, you may notice, the Google Play Store, right, which is where their app store. What happens is that when handset manufacturers like LG or Huawei or Samsung want to have that app store, they have to sign an agreement with Google in which they're also going to include Gmail and Google Search and all these other things. And the EU says that by doing this and by requiring that these handset manufacturers have Google services front and center when you're using Android, it's anti-competitive, right? Because there are other app stores out there. Amazon makes one. There are a couple others. And there's also other search engines out there, as we all know, most notably Microsoft's Bing. So by having all of these kind of anti-competitive behaviors, the EU says that Google is running afoul of antitrust laws.
And so that's why they're going after them, and that's why that's the difference maybe in the EU's approach and the U.S. approach. You're saying the EU is much more willing to engage and try to even things out.
Well, I think the problem in the United States, to be quite frank, is that the government doesn't understand here in the United States very well how the Internet works or how technology works. And we saw that on full display in, when Mark Zuckerberg was on Capitol Hill. You may remember a couple of months ago, right? The CEO of Facebook is on Capitol Hill. One of the first questions he's asked by one of these senior senators is how Facebook makes money, which is the biggest forehead slap in the world. And as a result, you know, it turns into, we saw that Wall Street, actually Facebook stock jumped when that question was asked, because Wall Street was like, okay, the U.S. government doesn't understand anything. They're not going to do anything. And ever since then, there's been no movement, right? So the United States is basically keeping themselves out of it, while the EU is really becoming the people who are, you know, pushing hard on privacy issues, going up against antitrust issues, all these things. Now, I'm not saying the tech industry needs it, but it's very clear that the EU is the only people trying to even think about it.
Well, you're right, though. There was this, there's going to be regulation now on social media. It's absolute. It's coming. And like everything else in Washington, it just sort of disappeared. They're going to be a ban on bump stocks. Absolutely. And then nothing happened. Speaking of Facebook, though, so Zuckerberg, he had an announcement this week where he's going to try to take down hate speech or speech that incites violence a little more quickly. I think this is a pretty good idea. Why wasn't he doing that years ago?
Well, I think that's the ongoing question, right? I mean, we're going on 14 years since Facebook was started, and only now it seems like these big, hairy questions are being asked and answered. And, so the most recent thing, you may notice that Facebook has been very hesitant to regulate its platform at all. You know, they allow some pretty bad stuff to be happening on there. And there's been a lot of criticism, particularly of InfoWars, right? Which, if you don't know what that is, we have a whole explanation on CNET. But among the other things, you know, there's an argument that's being made that InfoWars is violating Facebook's rules but still being allowed to remain on its platform. And so now Facebook is starting to draw lines, and they're saying, okay, well, if you're inciting violence, we're going to take you down, right? Which is at least kind of a start to show that they're trying to get some handle on this. But they're trying to have it a lot of different ways. And it's very clear that Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Facebook, is concerned about looking like he is being, that he's silencing voices, especially on conservative level, and all sorts of other stuff.
So that he can head off that regulation that's never really coming. Okay, let's get let's get gossipy a little bit. What's up with the Nest CEO?
Yeah, so we have this amazing scoop on CNET a couple of days ago where we found out that the CEO of Nest was stepping down after there was quite a bit of an employee revolt. And you may have heard of Nest, right? They're the people who make that thermostat that is $250. It's considered one of the best out there. CNET's given it really great reviews. But the challenge is that the company, ever since it was acquired by Google a few years ago, has been really challenged to kind of show the next step, right, what they're doing. They have a thermostat, they have a fire detector, and they have a security system, and they have an outdoor camera. But they haven't really been seen as kind of the leader in the same way that Amazon has kind of become one of the leaders in the home. And so what's happening is that it seems that the employees are pretty unhappy about this. They actually were saying, you know, they don't like the current CEO. It's turned out he's stepped down. And now they are changing how Nest is being handled in Google to respond to it. But it's a lot of interesting palace intrigue at Google. And it underscores how sometimes you need to be careful about who you're buying your stuff from when you're installing stuff in your home.
That's Ian Schur. You can read more about that and other stories at CNET.com. Ian, great to talk to you. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Have fun at Comic-Con.
I'll try.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
And start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Update on the Lincoln Yards development. The plans for the $5 billion 10-year project were released by Sterling Bay. And good golly, is it exciting. It's like a whole new city. It details 12 million square feet of office, retail, hotel, and residential space. Oh yeah, and a 20,000-seat soccer stadium. Andy Glore is the managing principal at Sterling Bay, and he's excited about the project because, quote, "Very rarely do you have an opportunity to have a blank slate." They're essentially creating a new neighborhood in between Lincoln Park and Bucktown, and it's featuring one of the city's most popular aspects at the moment, the river. Never a boring moment in the development scene here in the city. And neither at 1871. Today, the incubator is hosting a flurry of events all afternoon and evening, including the Be Your Own Boss Summer Entrepreneurship Camp, where they're teaching high schoolers from all around the CPS about what it takes to thrive in the entrepreneurial world. The classes also cover the latest in crypto and various pitch competitions, but don't worry, this stuff is happening all summer long, so check it out at 1871.com. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Thank you very much, Orion. It is 12:52 here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Elise Glink is on a phone line. Elise, of course, the brains behind ThinkGlink.com, also the CEO of Best Money Moves, an HR app that businesses use to help their employees deal with financial stress and figure out ways to make it better. Elise, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
It's nice to be here. Thank you.
Okay, so I've learned now I've got to change the way I put my return address online when I buy something. I've got to use caps. I've got to change my email address. There's all these things. There's a story out that Bennett Wakenight pulled, and actually it was from you, from thinklink.com, about how your digital footprint could soon be used or may tell creditors more about you than your credit score.
It's very interesting. So creditors are now moving to non-traditional forms of information in order to understand what your credit paying behavior might be like. And so Frankfurt School of Management and Finance looked at 250,000 pieces of information, and they found that an individual digital footprint, so user information left online by accessing or registering on a website, equals or exceeds the FICO score when it comes to predicting financial behavior. And that's pretty interesting.
All right, so
and
let's,
scary.
Let's run down a little bit of this. So I mentioned the phones. Android users are twice as likely to default on a loan than are Apple users. The story.
Yeah, it's
Apple devices is one of the best predictors for being in the top quartile of income distribution.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? So when you buy stuff with your mobile phone, which more and more people are likely to do, for example, the people that visit thinklink.com are more than half of them use their phones to do anything, but they're three times as likely to default on a purchase than those who bought their purchases based on a desktop or tablet.
Are they implying,
which is super interesting.
Are they implying that they're impulse buys or?
It might be that the study doesn't actually go deeply into the conclusions, but what it does say is, you know, it shows that the behavior itself. So I would speculate that people who are buying on their phones are much more likely to do that impulse buying, especially on days like the Amazon sales days, right? Because you're on the phone and you see an ad come in and you click and you buy.
I saw that if you buy things between midnight and 6 a.m., you're inclined to default, which that's understandable. I get that link. Not if you have a Yahoo email address. People who have a Yahoo email address are twice as likely to default on a loan. If you have a Hotmail address, almost 1.5 times as likely.
Well, and the study found that those who don't use capital letters when filling out their names and shipping addresses are also twice as likely to default, which kind of goes back to that whole impulse buying thing where you have all of your credit cards stored digitally, like in a Google Wallet or in an Apple Pay, and you just can click, 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 and you're done with your buying.
I do pretty well on this. I have an iPhone. I don't have a Yahoo or Hotmail address. I do have my full name in my email address, but I don't always use the caps button. I do just put my name in lowercase. So does that mean one day I'm going to be turned down for a mortgage?
I don't think just yet. So what mortgage companies are now using is a kind of alternative data that includes things like how often and regularly you're paying your rent, for example. Now, I know you own your home, so you have a mortgage. That's normally been part of it because when you take out a mortgage, you're actually taking out traditional debt. But if you're renting, for example, lenders are now looking at your on-time rent payments, your cell phone bill payments, your other kinds of other information that's not traditionally scored by FICO, which is, you know, more of the traditional credit behavior, but they're looking at other things in order to be able to come up with an alternative data credit model. And all of the credit reporting bureaus are now doing it. In fact, this week, Equifax announced that it had purchased a company called DataX, which actually is on the small side, but it also collects the sort of non-traditional or alternative data, and they're going to be feeding that into their regular credit scores.
So when I check my credit score at Equifax, right now it has mostly to do with numbers and charge cards and things like that. My email address doesn't factor into it, but it might one day.
It might one day, but right now Experian and TransUnion, which are a little further down the path than Equifax in the alternative data file, what they're looking at is actually feeding in your rent payment data, your, you know, utility data, your cell phone data, how often you pay those bills, how well and regularly, and that's going to start feeding into their regular credit score. So what you may soon see is an adjustment in your credit score, probably higher, if you pay those bills on time as well. What we saw last year was how they started to feed in medical payment data and getting rid of some medical bills that are now feeding into your credit score, maybe having a negative effect.
Elise Glink, thanks very much. We'll check out more. Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And
see
remember,
you soon.
Be careful when you're creating a new email address. Full name, use your caps for the first and last name.